Red on Red.
This week on the podcast, we're joined by Ghost King is Dead bassist, messing and solo multi-instrumentalist, and music journalist JJ Lee.
Come on, you can't be for real.
sit down.
Sits on his ass, come on.
Pretty happy with Shut Up ahead of their gigs this weekend. Tomorrow night at the Roundy with Land Crabs in support. Doors at 9 o'clock, a fiver in. And on Friday night with the Slut Club at O'Cana's in Mallow as part of the Mallow Arts Festival. Entry is free for that one. We also have Ghost King is Dead with Deflector, most recent single available from Houseu Records and for streaming across all good streaming services. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, dropping every Wednesday evening via Cork's Red FM and redextra.ie. We're also available on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all your other podcasting apps and platforms. My name is Mike McGrath-Bryan, and this week we're joined in studio by Ghost King is Dead bass player, messing and solo multi-instrumentalist, music journalist, gig promoter, Teletext Records boy, just a man of many talents and a man about town, Mr. JJ Lee. JJ, what's the crack?
How are you?
Grand. No, it's a pleasure to have you here finally as the other bass playing music journalist in town. We're gonna twist some ears. We're gonna have some really boring conversation. But first, it's been a really busy weekend for you. You're just off of the back of Knockin' Stockin' with the boys in Messing. Knockin' Stockin', of course, one of the very few festivals that books exclusively Irish talent, a celebration of the DIY scene and culture in Ireland. And Messing were right in the thick of it, from what I can see.
Yeah, we were. God, we were actually like really taken aback with the crowd that we got up there. Like, it was a beautiful festival, and like, fair play to all the organisers, and especially the guys down at the Rasher Factory stage that we were on.
Which was a highlight. It was the one thing I was seeing on my social media. Crack yeah. Boy, Messing,
it was
all the lads.
Great crack. Yeah, it kind of, we slot in there perfectly in our own little weird, whatever world you want to call it. Mm. But yeah, I think it kind of really helped us as well that the people that went to that stage kind of knew already what they were getting into.
Yeah.
It was going to be a bit weird and a bit strange. But yeah, we got a great crowd in there, and they were all up for it, and they kind of shared the anti-Healy Ray sentiment. They were loving that.
The anti-Healy Ray sentiment is exactly what we're living for.
Yeah.
And it's not just because we're from Cork, obviously.
Yeah.
Here on Cork's Red FM 104 to 106. But speaking of being a busy boy lately, you also have something of an announcement, something of a scoop for us on the Red on Red podcast. Come on to us now.
Bit of a scoop. I'm going to be putting out my second single there next week, August 1st. Hopefully, anyway, all things going well. But yeah, we're going to try and put it out there next week, and it's called Showbiz Baby. And much like the first single Thursday, I can't sing, of all things. I just can't do it. So I've used a lot of sound bites and stuff, and this one is basically just all of Eamon Dunphy.
Yeah.
It's just clips of him going off on people.
That's what you want.
Exactly, yeah. It was great. I was just on a bit of a YouTube binge there one day, yeah. Just searching through stuff, and all the clips of Eamon just coming up, especially from like World Cup 2002 era, when he's just kind of half smashed on air a lot, an awful lot, and he's just going off on people on live television.
We'll talk a little bit about that, because sampling and Irish popular culture factors in hugely into what you do with messing, but your solo career then is kind of a bedroom pop take on that. And we'll talk about that in due course, but let's dial it back a little bit. You're from the tourism hub of Ballyhaig in County Kerry, which in and of itself is kind of among a cluster of small towns that has weird music people in and around it, whether you want to call it North Kerry noise, whether it is other things that are happening, boys like Aerialists, etc. There's generally been like a good outflow of fantastical musical weirdos from that general area. Maybe bring us into the condition of growing up kind of among that set, or kind of attempting to kind of bring together whatever kind of mini scene you can out of North Kerry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think an awful lot of what used to happen for us and an outlet that we had was in Tralee, the nearest town to us. They had the KDYS there, the youth centre basically, and they used to run gigs kind of weekly or kind of every second week.
Yeah,
there inside in town, which was just a great outlet for young people to go in and play music and just go in and be allowed to make noise without annoying anyone and just being told to put it all out there. It doesn't matter what it is, people were, and everyone there was like really receptive. And I think an awful lot of what's coming out of Kerry now is people that played in that that area back when they were 13, 14, 15. We've just kind of grown up and gotten a bit stranger.
Of course.
Basically. And yeah, it's just, it's that same kind of hub of people. Like, I've known people like Danny and Donna from Teletext and Messing. I knew Danny, I went to school with him, I went to secondary school with him, and I knew Donna from being around in kind of musical scenes, and the likes of PJ Galvin, who goes under Scenes, who's actually, well, he's abroad now, but was living in Limerick for ages. Ooh. I knew him through that as well. And yeah, just all those people kind of, it's a great thing down below at home. People are just happy to see anything coming out of there.
Yeah.
So when somebody actually comes out and is doing something, we're all like, oh, good man, fair play.
In terms then of picking up the bass as your primary instrument, because that always seems to be the go-to for kind of musos and nerds that kind of know when to kind of pick a role for themselves in a band, so to speak, or make themselves useful to a band. Maybe talk to us a little bit about, you know, you're in the KDYS and you're making your initial kind of, your initial kind of noises. What motivates you to pick up a bass and begin occupying the kind of organizer role in tandem to that?
Yeah, I think when I was very young anyway, I started off playing guitar, as most people would, kind of that sort of a way. And it was more so out of necessity at a very early age. Not that nobody was willing to play bass, but everyone wanted to be the cool fella up the front playing guitar or either singing.
Yep.
That sort of a way. So I was kind of politely asked, shall we say, in no uncertain terms, would I play bass? And of course, I was just happy to be up there making tunes and having the crack. So like that, early days, it was just kind of more so out of necessity. And once I stopped, there was a kind of a period there in my teenage years when I was just in my room, just kind of tipping away and whatever,
yeah,
with playing guitar and noodling away. But I wasn't playing gigs or anything. And then once I came up to Cork here in college and kind of got stuck back into things, it was kind of like a similar thing where it was born out of necessity again, asking, oh, we need a bass player, can you play bass? And me going, yeah, I haven't done it in years, but absolutely, yeah, I'll do it.
Let's get into that then, because you come to Cork for college. And as you mentioned, you're immediately kind of snapped up to play in a couple of different bands, the most high profile of which would be Dry Roasted Peanuts. First off, where did the name come from?
You'd have to ask Mark and Rob that from the band. It was kind of a running joke that in any interview that we had, you'd always give a different answer. I think I remember Rob or I one day talking about how I think he just saw a bag of peanuts one day and was just kind of going, yeah, that'll do.
Food as band names is something that's can be a bit contentious.
Yeah.
I mean, was it Number Theory from Humans of the Sesh was going on at length there about the indie band called Cabbage and how, yeah, that was deeply uninspired.
Yeah.
So I don't know, was that just in my mind when, like, you know, full disclosure, I write the Nile or Nine Cork gig guide, and putting Dry Roasted Peanuts on that was kind of like a uniquely all ages gig,
Irish
phenomenon. Alongside all these other things that were happening, like Gilbert or what have you.
Yeah.
Getting into the Cork scene and getting familiar with, really, which at the time, maybe 3-4 years ago, the city was already in the process of beginning to change. Venue turnover had slowed down, but was still a thing. We were about to lose the community art centres, like the Camden, like Sample. Talk to us a little bit about kind of your initial grappling around the Cork music scene.
Yeah, when I arrived up here first, anyway, I think nearly for about a year exclusively, it was just playing gigs in Fred's. Fred Zeppelin's, of course, which is a great outlet for anyone that wants to get in making music, especially for like the metal scene that's in the city that is booming.
It's the only outlet for the metal scene.
That's it, you know, and it's a fantastic venue to have there. But yeah, like that, I'd say for a good year anyway, solid, it was just gigs there, and there was nowhere really else you could even put on a gig feasibly if you wanted.
Yeah.
Then places kind of started popping up. Spalpeen Phonics started putting on gigs again. The Kino reopened, which was fantastic.
Sad news about them too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a shame to see that go down as well. But yeah, and then you've got the likes of Jim over in Plugged doing great stuff upstairs in the Roundy. That's fantastic to have that going. And yeah, slowly but surely there's more kind of spaces opening up again, and just making it accessible. I think accessibility is the real real core of it.
I think once the recession hit and bar guarantees stop being a thing,
absolutely,
deposits on gigs, etc., because those can be the things that stop an 18-year-old to 21-year-old, you know, in a band that's looking to just kind of either go in with other bands on getting things organised, or even like say just even small scale tours going around the place if there's nobody that can afford to facilitate
absolutely
a band coming in from another town, you know, but they can at least afford to, you know, give them a floor to sleep on at the very least. These are the things that can stop, you know, grassroots musical development from happening in the first place. So, you know, again, the diversity of small spaces is great. And again, you see the expansion of Cypress Avenue. You see other venues kind of coming along. See Dally, even with their blockbuster announcement today now, with John Hopkins playing there as part of Sounds from a Safe Harbour.
It's huge.
What a get. Things seem to have really come around. Against that backdrop, you yourself transitioned from a role with Dry Roasted Peanuts in that kind of indie punk mould, and into something that is becoming a bit more sophisticated in the guise of joining the Ghost King Is Dead band. Ghost King, of course, the bedroom pop project of Matt Corrigan, who had been hanging around since... I remember first seeing him when he was 14, 15. We were hanging around Room 101 Studios and he was looking for gigs, and we were broadcasting the Camden Palace all-ages gigs in there. Room101radio.eu for Cork Community Radio, folks. But I remember him even then having his ideas, having his concepts. How did you find getting involved with that and slotting into it, bringing your own touch to the table as Ghost King becomes Ghost King Is Dead and Houseu begins to crystallise?
Yeah, Matt's a fantastic chap. I was actually introduced to him through Chris O'Sullivan, who's one of my best friends in the country, in the world, we'll say.
Yeah.
He was the drummer in Dry Roasted Peanuts as well. And Matt got in contact with him first and said, look, I'm looking to form a band, look for a bass player. Chris put me up to it. I'd never met Matt before. I'd listened to one or two of the tracks that he had up on Spotify and other things like that.
Yeah.
And I was just delighted to be asked. And we went up and we had a rehearsal up in Blackpool, just booked it out for a few hours just to see. We're kind of going in from scratch. It was myself, Chris, Neil O'Sullivan Green on guitar, and Matt. And yeah, it was very, very, very seamless. It was fantastic. It's just one of the things that kind of worked straight away. And it was kind of happy days from there then, really. I think it was only about 2 months on, I think, from that practice that Matt had organized a gig.
And giving himself something to shoot for as well as getting
the rest exactly,
of the
in line, yeah, it so just kind of gave it a bit of kick up the hole.
And Houseu has come together so quickly since. Like, last week's episode is available for streaming now on redfm.ie, redextra.ie, and all of your apps. We're talking to Colm Callan of Houseu Records about how the whole project came together and what it's been doing for the development of the young artists that are involved in the collective. Kind of, what's your take being involved with the collective of your own with Teletext, which we'll talk about in a bit more detail later on, but also seeing how it's providing a bulwark against some of the excesses of the music industry for Ghost King Is Dead? What's your take on it?
The Houseu thing is great. I remember Matt very early on saying that there was some sort of an idea being bandied about with the collective. And once it got off the ground, I was really impressed with the lads and their work ethic, especially with Colm and his drive. And he's great vision.
Yeah.
You know, he always seems like he's just two or three steps ahead.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And I think it's just a great platform there to have all the lads in kind of making not similar music, but in a similar vein, that they can bounce ideas off. And they're all fantastic producers, all of the lads. Like Drew Linnan, they're from Automatic Blue, and Actual Acid as well. It's just fantastic stuff. And to kind of have those sounding boards as well, as like an artist and trying to write things, it's great to just have someone either reassure you or B, tell you that it's crap, basically.
Yeah.
And go back to square one. So yeah, the Houseu thing, and even with like the booking of the gigs and stuff, it's great to put on like these big Houseu nights,
yeah,
where people kind of know what they're getting,
Like on August the 1st in Cypress Avenue.
Exactly, yeah. Next week. Yeah, so the House of Lads, really good stuff. It's just so impressive. I honestly don't know how they keep up to it. Like, running a collective ourselves, they're just so on the ball with, like, their visuals and the organisation side of things. Fair play to them.
Separate then from your development as a musician, both with Ghost King Is Dead and solo, you begin to be involved with, oh, God knows what you'd refer to it as in terms of, like, journalist-friendly subgenres. But the musical project that is known, therefore, as Messing with a Y, emerges from practices and collaborations that you have with other members of it. For those of us that are not wretched enough of mind to try and grasp its membership from the very, very beginning, talk to us a little bit about the project, how it came together, what the fuck you're up to.
It was actually born out of, was it last year, the year before, when the snow hit, that time around April or March, and everything just shut down. It's actually Danny O'Shea and Donna Shukru, who I'm in teletext with. They were living together at the time and decided that they'd write an electronic EP in a day. And so I think they just basically got a load of wine into them and just decided that this is what was going to happen. So they wrote what was to become the first Messing EP. And they came to me with it already done and said, would you be interested in getting involved in this? And I said, absolutely, this sounds gas crack.
How do you extrapolate those ideas to live?
It was like, when we started it, we thought people would obviously recognize it straight away for what it was, in that it was like a thundering joke. It was like,
many bands have started as thundering jokes.
We kind of thought we're going to be found out so easily with this. So I think we booked it was a charity gig. We didn't book it, but we were playing it a few months afterwards, and people lapped it up. They completely, the joke flew over most of the people's heads. Was that
showcase at Cypress Ave?
No, there was, it was, God, where was it? I think it was in the Poor Relation. It was a charity gig.
There you go.
And we just decided that we had a bit of a brainstorming sesh. We never practiced either, but we had a brainstorming sesh where we'd all wear really hipstery cool clothes of the time, and I had this idea to put up a projector behind us and just project clips onto it.
You're just asking for trouble there.
Exactly, yeah. And the clips that we just decided, kind of like a shoegazy style of a clip, but I just used all like old VHS footage from RTE and reeling in the ears and stuff, and just put a weird filter over it.
Yeah.
And the joke kind of was lost on a lot of people.
But if people get into it,
people were like, they enjoyed it and everyone had a great time. And then we decided that we'd write a song in the summer, which came out to be Bodies.
Which has got a lot of play as well that early ended on up, in the runs of the podcast here.
That got picked up. We got a few spins on 2FM from Dan Hegarty as well, which was just baffling, because Donna will attest to the fact that he never mastered that track. That's not even mastered. That was just put up like...
Your most recent release... the Crespo tape.
The Crespo tapes,
Which never fails to crease me up when I think of Hernan Crespo being immortalised in that respect. Out in Scaldwave Records.
Big up to the Scaldwave lads.
Do you care to clue us in on what exactly Scaldwave is, much less its record?
Scaldwave, the name kind of gives it all away, really. It's just Scaldy tunes, basically.
There's a whole Bandcamp of this. Scaldwave
Records.
S-C-A-U-L-D Wave Records. Bandcamp.com.
I feel like I'd be doing a disservice if I tried to explain this through words. I think you just need to have a listen. But yeah, with the Messing stuff, kind of when we realised that people weren't picking up on the joke straight away, we just kind of pushed it out more. And I think the first joke was that, oh, JJ, I'll just wear a Kerry jersey on stage. That'll be funny. And then it...
Bad idea.
Yeah. And then it transitioned to, I have this full Spider-Man outfit at home, I can put that on. So then it became me wearing a full Spider-Man outfit with the Kerry jersey on top of it.
You've bust into costume before on a bunch of occasions. I remember you at Quarter Block Party dressed as the Road Dog Jesse James.
With Ghost King. I do enjoy my outfits on stage, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, the kind of the DX jersey with Ghost King has become like a thing now. That's just what I wear.
That's where it deserves to be.
Yeah, you know,
in meme culture,
it deserves to be. It should be profiled there and given a pedestal.
Working with Post Punk Podge of Post Punk Podge and the Techno Hippies, who was another highlight of the stage that you were at in Knockin' Stockin' last week. Talk to us a little bit about the collaborative single that you've done with him.
Yeah, the turned out great. Basically, with the whole messing process, Donna will form up a beat, really. Yeah. We might come up with an idea between us. Donna will put the beat on it. Danny will do lyrics. I might throw in a few lyrics. Yeah. And in this case, we sent it on to Podge and said we'd like to do a track. And of course, target number one is always the Healy Rays.
It should be.
It's just easy fodder as well. Mm. They make it very simple. So yeah, we released Donkey Healy Rave there a while back. And Podge,
right in time for local elections also. Yeah, that Paddy Courage, he knows his target market.
Exactly. And yeah, it was a great reception to that as well. And Podge, of course, is just he's a genius of a man. Mm. Great to see the amount of success and popularity he's gaining at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the fact that it's earned. It's not a matter absolutely, of industry yeah. hype. It's not a matter of the right person at the right place at the right time. It's him and DJ Jurassic Park 2 and
Mr. Cash for Gold.
Not to mention the continued interventions of Dr. Asparagus Montague.
Exactly.
It's all just such a wonderful story to see play out in front of us. But speaking of Donna Shukru and his musical adventures, coming up as part of the playlist that you have assembled for us this week, you have the dearly departed Aerialist with In Las Pagodas from their posthumously released EP.
Yeah, press F to pay respects, I think. Danny and Donna and Luke and Owen, formerly known as Aerialist. Yeah, they were a great band. It was great when I came up to Cork here first to see the lads trucking away, considering that I knew them down at home and could see people going up and playing good gigs.
Yeah.
They were known as Red Sky Plains then, which transitioned into Aerialist. But yeah, and the fact that it was very quote unquote not mainstream music, they were doing something a bit more different than the norm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a shame that they're broken up, but I'm so delighted that they managed to get the EP out in the end. And In Glass Pagodas. Great tune.
Speaking of Teletext Records artists, you also have Gilbert or the Unfathomable Loneliness of the Deep Space Prospector with The Witch, taken from their debut album.
Yeah, that album was sensational.
The launch gig was class.
Oh, there was a fun story behind that. The lads had kind of nothing planned because they were all up the walls with college and stuff. Mm. A lot of the lads are in final year. And they kind of had nothing planned for a launch gig. And then about a week beforehand, they came to us and said, we'd like to put on a launch gig. So we were a bit like, ooh, that's a bit short notice for just a week. But
Jimmy Plugged, you know, was good with that.
Yeah, no, Jimmy was fantastic, the Unplugged. And you know what? It kind of added to this. It kind of gave it a guerrilla sense. It was just like, Gilbert are playing now. It's happening. They're not going to be playing anytime soon. It's probably going to be the end of the summer before they do it again. And Jesus, yeah, they just blew the roof off the place. It was fantastic. I remember when they sent on like the early mixes of that album and I was just floored by it. I listened to the whole thing. I was like, this is sensational.
We'll hear from Gilbert momentarily, but first, this is Aerialist with In Glass Pagodas here on Red on Red. Thank you.
His crib had been one of bones, a lamb's tongue as soother. In her madness, his mother had gathered a bed of leaves, and there in a damp hole in the earth, she had begotten him. On the walls of her cave, she scrawled her own archaic art. She clung to its limestone walls like some obtrusion from the rock. Ground water dripping acidic from her chin. In it carried all that was leached from the soil. All manner of plant, worm, and dung. Yet scarred beneath her eyes, begging not to be fed again. Knowing even then that to drink from her was to lap up dirty water.
Gilbert or the unfathomable loneliness of the Deep Space Prospector with The Witch, taken from their debut album, available across all good streaming services via Teletext Records. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, and still joining us in studio is a man of many talents, most of which we have gone into several minutes listing at the very top of the show, so we'll not labour at it further, JJ Lee. And before the jump, we were talking about your earliest experiences, about transitioning into the Cork City music scene, and eventually how you ended up affiliated with the group of musicians that would later go on to co-found Teletext Records. I've been hassling Donna Shukru to come on the podcast for weeks, so if you're listening, Donna, you know where I am. Let's get this done. But in the meantime, you've kind of outlined your role a little bit with Teletext Records. And I suppose really for those that aren't familiar, Teletext Records is a multimedia music collective with a focus on experimental and left field art coming out of the greater Munster area, not just Cork City, although that's where you kind of claim residence. And from within the, you know, the infrastructure of a label, which is the name that you've given yourself to kind of denote a sense of authenticity, according to Donna in The Echo a couple of weeks ago, you know, you've formed a collective wherein, you know, everybody brings a skill set to the table and can contribute to the greater running of the infrastructure that can further boost the activities, artistic or otherwise, of the people involved with the collective. Talk to us a little bit, I suppose, about your perspective on Teletext Records coming together, your experience, and, you know, just kind of what your role is and how you see this kind of fitting into music in Cork.
Yeah, I think with the whole idea with Teletext was just to kind of build a framework that was there. Myself, Danny and Don have obviously played a load of gigs around not just Munster, but like the country as well. And it is very difficult to get booked for gigs, to have like a sounding out point. So yeah, we just kind of wanted to get something together there for more kind of left of field acts. Not just kind of weird instrumentally experimental stuff, but, you know, like Apenham, who we have, are a straight out metal band, but we also have the likes of Gilbert, who are, I don't even know what you put them in, they're kind of a
space rock.
Space rock is what they go under. Yeah,
yeah.
Then you've got the likes of Rakaya up in Limerick, who's doing fantastic stuff, and of course we had Aerialist on the label before they met their untimely doom.
They became label people.
That's it, yeah. They got out of the music industry, man, and just, well, out of the gigging industry. Mm. But yeah, I think it was just to provide a platform, kind of similarly to what DIYLK are doing up in Limerick, just to have someone that you can kind of approach, maybe if you want to try and get a gig in Cork. Mm. That kind of happened afterwards. We didn't plan on booking gigs. When we started Teletext, we decided that we were going to have maybe one or two gigs a year.
Yeah.
So we had our first ever showcase gig back last October, November, and that was supposed to be it. And then it just kind of got into, well, we've got our acts, they're looking for gigs, let's collab with other collectives like Burner Records up in Dublin or DIYLK about doing three city tours. So we've got Gilbert there, who are in the middle of doing a three kind of city run. And we've got more shows coming up at Apenham as well. And we've just kind of fallen into the whole idea of booking gigs. And I think Donna put it the best when he said we're kind of building the plane as it flies, that sort of a way. Mm. We've recently launched a community page on Facebook for anyone that's attended gigs, just as kind of a way to get ideas from people that attend our shows for what they'd like to see more of.
I love that it's gig attendees only in the first instance, so that you know that it's not just somebody coming along to ask for bookings for their country band.
That's the thing, yeah. Because like we've seen so much of that, and it's very frustrating. You want people there that are actually a part of the scene that you're in, or are making an active effort to get into the scene and build upon it.
Yeah.
You don't want just someone coming in and trying to make a bit of dough off everyone else. Mm. And then I suppose my role in Teletext is just, we're all kind of fluid enough. A lot of what I do is just kind of more so the socials and the press, and I take on a lot of work on the day of the gigs as well, just by plugging holes wherever the holes might arise.
All hands on deck.
Exactly. Like doing doors and stuff, and making sure that the lads are happy when we've got them coming down for gigs, and looking after things.
Yeah.
General man about town crack.
That's it. It's interesting, obviously, that you've gone on to take press and socials for a collective, as it is for a lot of people, is, I suppose, reverse engineering your prior experience in music journalism. A lot of the time, people that are writing about music often enough kind of master its narrative enough to kind of let you know why you should care about a certain project and essentially know the ways and means of storytelling for an artist to get wider attention. But before we kind of talk about music journalism, music PR and all of this in kind of a rather less kind of beatsy fashion, I suppose just briefly outline your experiences with music journalism vis-a-vis the UCC Express and the entertainment page of the Cork Independent.
Yeah, it was just something that I always had an interest in kind of growing up, and I did English and History in UCC, so I think it was natural enough that at some point I'd end up writing. I think when I was in first year, I did very little writing for the Express, but then in second year, took it up more. And it wasn't exclusively music at that point. It was just kind of a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I did a bit of film, did a bit of music. And then in third year, I got the music editor role, because I knew that's what I kind of wanted to do. I could lend myself and I could be more useful in that position. And
another parallel that we have, we've both been music editor at the UCC Express.
There you go now.
Telling you.
It's a prime position.
It's all ahead of you. That's what I can tell you.
But yeah, like, and it was a great experience, but going into music like that, I think an awful lot of what I did through music journalism was kind of born out of frustration from being in bands and seeing the way that they might have been either kind of ignored in a certain way, or when they were featured, it's very just kind of like a pat on the head, good lads, fair play to you, that sort of a way. No one really gave it the time of day, or from what I saw anyway at that time. So when I kind of started with the Express, I made kind of a conscious effort that it was just going to be all local bands. Like 101 people are reviewing Ed Sheeran's latest album. Why should the college paper be doing it as well? It kind of makes no sense to me anyway. So then you big up your, not just your mates, but anyone that you know around the scene. You talk about what makes them good, why people should listen to it.
This is the thing, the power of storytelling.
Exactly, yeah.
You reward hard work by outlining why somebody with zero knowledge, but though it's difficult, you cannot understate the fact that you're, you know, you assume zero knowledge on the part of the reader.
Yeah.
But then you build up that rapport, why somebody should care. Why you should care about, you know, Messing that have, like, you know, like an amber leaf graphic on their Bandcamp page, and what their general their shenanigans are, or what, you know, sensitive bedroom poets like Ghost King is Dead are up to, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, finding the human interest angle of that for me was the biggest part, I suppose, of my transition out of nerdy music journalism and into, you know, features journalism for the Evening Echo. But that also then informed my approach to, you know, non-profits and charities and local history and other things that I now get to do for The Echo with the Life section, as well as what I do inside of music, is just generally kind of learning to relate, to find that point of relatability.
Yeah.
And I suppose relay it forward. Which I suppose leads me to the conversation that I've been looking to have with you for a while, so we may as well just kind of have it on the air where
it
can be of interest. It's no secret that music journalism in Ireland is in a state of transition. And you and I now, we're both doing other things kind of contemporaneous to our roles in music journalism. And I mean, like, when you look at it, you know, there's a lot of closures, both print and online.
Yeah.
You know, Remy, gone. State, gone. Certain national broadsheets no longer hiring and or have stopped running dedicated music columns. It's at a point where, you know, print is kind of jettisoning what it feels is non-essential stuff. And you could debate that all day, and we could argue for the merits of having, like, a solid music supplement in your nationals or what have you. We could be here all day talking about that. As well as, you know, obviously the closures of blogs and of other kind of online presences, etc., that for one reason or another have not been able to turn the ad-funded free thing to their advantage or make the best out of Patreon. Now, for all of those, there are still outlets out there that need our support, like, full disclosure, Niall or Nine, who's currently running a Patreon and offering a whole bunch of other bonuses to potential patrons that can be involved. Golden Plek leading the way with fantastic music photography in particular, courtesy of Shane J. Horan and the lads.
Fantastic.
Really kind of capitalising on the fact that a lot of journalism is now visual. Whether or not we here as wordsmiths like to like to admit it, a lot of the battle is won with what people see in their Definitely. Feeds or people see on a printed page. Dedicated outlets like the Irish Metal Archive, archival offerings like the Blackpool Sentinel, kind of providing a context for the development that we see in Irish music, or even the rise of specialist print like District Magazine in particular, really at the vanguard of what's happening with Irish hip-hop. Ever was it thus, there's as much hope as there is cause for concern in Irish music journalism. Being acquainted with the realities of freelancing in Ireland, JJ, maybe talk to us about your experiences in Irish music journalism, what you've seen of it, and what you would like to see.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, from my point of view anyway, it's more of a cause for concern. The music journalists that are out there doing their thing, like yourself at the moment, are doing like God's work. But
we do our best, you know.
But we'll kind of say in the last year and a half, I can count on one hand the amount of times that I've written a music piece. And I think before that I was very gung-ho and actively trying to get work and trying to cover stuff. And there's always platforms there for you to write and to get out your stuff, but actually trying to make ends meet while doing so that's the problem. Like, I'm not shy of work. I've often done unpaid internships that, like, it's not ideal. We can get into the ins and outs of it about whether or not it's right or wrong. It's not right. But, you know, so they have to be done. But they shouldn't be done, but oftentimes they are having to be done. But yeah, it's just very, I was going to say cutthroat, but that'd be the completely wrong word at all. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. I've been in contact with countless papers, not just in Cork, but like throughout the country. And it kind of seems that there's not an interest there for, we'll say, from large national outlets, unless you're specifically going into music outlets, we'll say, yeah, like Niler 9 and The Point of Everything, blogs like that and stuff.
We should shout out for providing not only a fantastic online music journalism outlet in particular, but also leading the way in complementing it with a fantastic podcast that has since become that website's priority export.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned there as well, Golden Black, who do fantastic stuff. I think it's just harder and harder for someone to offer a staff job there where they can pay them consistently. And even with freelancing and stuff like that, you know from yourself, you'll do some work and then it's trying to get the money afterwards.
Gotcha.
It's just, it's a very difficult way to live. So I think even when I came out of college first, I knew that I couldn't go straight into it. I had to build up a bit of a wealth of funds to fall back on before I could kind of dive into it again. I plan on going back into it, but it's just kind of cooled off an awful lot lately, which is just a shame.
Luck, I think, has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
For myself with The Echo now, and I hope I'm not upscuttling anybody in The Echo when I talk about my earliest experiences, where I was knocking on the door for a couple of years. And, you know, it started with just, give us a job, to like pitching ideas and all of this, back to, give us a job. And one day I got the email back and they needed someone to talk to Blind Boy Boat Club. And nobody else was available. And it was a midweek and it was 3 o'clock. I, you know, made some excuse for myself at the job I was in at the time and just went and took the call with Blind Boy Boat Club for half an hour. And, you know, I had worked with Specialist Media previously, didn't quite get the gist of storytelling just yet for a wider audience. But Blind Boy Boat Club is one of those presences whereby even when he's on his Flann O'Brienist, you know, he's somebody that gets it across with such a charisma and with such a writerly articulacy that it's just going to make for sparkling copy. And he was on the other end of the phone line to me for about a half an hour, giving me his material. All I did was ask about his upcoming, the Rubber Bandits upcoming play at the time in the Everyman Palace, and all of these other things that they were up to at the time. You know, the documentaries that they were piloting for RTE at the time, and other bits and pieces. I think he was talking about writing a book for the first time, and look where that's led him since, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
I sent it back, and one of the people working there at the time was like, this is fantastic, you should keep getting work. And, like, it's a hell of a thing to go from, like, being stuck in first gear to that happening to kind of encountering different bouts of traction and non-traction over the course of it. And, like, you're saying it yourself, like, it's tough as a freelancer because not only is there the whole thing of the question of sustainability, but there's also the mental health question of, am I doing this right at any given time?
Exactly, yeah.
am I taking it overly personally that I'm not getting the email back and someone else is?
Yeah.
How come X has this and I don't? How come they're so far along and they've done this, that, and the other, and I have that? And you know, it's not rational.
Yeah.
It's not reasonable to subject yourself to. It's not fair. But by that same token, those are still the questions that you ask yourself as a freelancer, not only in music journalism, but you know, any kind of board where you're kind of, where you're in charge of your own destiny. I suppose maybe talk about how you kind of balanced those inevitable thoughts yourself with,
yeah,
you know, the uptick of what you were doing.
I think, yeah, a point that really led me to kind of just reassess everything that I was doing. I've been with the Express and I'd done the work with the Cork Independent, and I was doing other things. I'd written for State a few times, and had I done something for Golden Black at that point? But I had dipped my foot was well in now at this point. But I think I was actually doing an interview with, it was Stephen King from Fan Club.
Yeah.
And got chatting to him. It was around the time of their debut album. And it didn't even come across as an interview. We just had a great chat on the phone. And he actually ended up just asking about me. Was I involved in music? We got chatting. I said I was. We played in the band, blah, blah, blah. He was like, cool, man. I'll check out your stuff. And, you know, you've probably heard that a million times as well. People say that. I didn't expect anything of that.
Yeah.
But it was a few months later and they were looking for sports slots for their shows, and he got on to me and said, oh, we'd love to have you up in Dublin, in Whelan's.
Cool.
To open up. And I was just kind of blown away by someone being that polite.
Yeah.
And it kind of was just...
I love how you described that as politeness, like it hasn't merited anything, the fact that they're calling you back.
Yeah. But it was just... He was so genuine, and it was just kind of the most genuine experience that I'd had in a nice few months in terms of writing and stuff, because it can be kind of cold.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, and I think just from there then, I just kind of drifted off from the writing a small bit. I just got back into playing, and I kind of focused all my energies into playing more because, yeah, I was seeing more out of it.
Different things will take you at different times.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's all about the mindset that you create for yourself. And can I do this, or can I come back and do this at a certain age and keep myself relevant?
Yeah.
How can I keep myself relevant? Do I even want to stay relevant? There's so many great things happening in the music scene right now in Ireland.
Absolutely.
That fly completely under the radar.
Yeah.
And there's another kind of... There's another narrative about Irish music that holds that it's all happening exclusively within a small clique of, you know, people. A lot of the time, very well represented management-wise, etc.
Absolutely, yeah.
You and I could go on for ages about it. You know, yeah, the kind of the tale of two cities thing,
yes,
that kind of happens between DIY music and then later on people that kind of take the ideas and make them a bit more presentable.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
So, yeah, like we could go on about the guilty parties involved all day, or we could talk about where do you see music journalism in Ireland going in terms of not only the sustainability argument, but in terms of either lighting a candle or cursing the dark?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going along the way of like the Niler 9, getting Patreons. I think making it more, wouldn't say niche, but making it more focused, as in like a lot of people would read, they don't want to read about Codeline or the Coronas or something.
Well, I was
like
going to name names, but there you go.
But you know, like well-established Irish acts that are, yeah, already, you know, they're at that point. They don't need any more help.
Yeah.
The way that I went, like at my writing and stuff, was to help people, to elevate them up to a level.
But that's what we all do.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
All go into,
yeah, yeah.
Document it, because we all, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Or exactly.
That's,
yes.
That's the logic, anyway.
If one person does well, the whole scene, like, is celebrated then, because,
yeah, 'cause it reflects well.
Yeah, if you're looking at X person because they're getting really popular, other people are going to say, oh, well, this person came out of Cork, so there must be like a good thing happening down there.
Yeah.
And then there's just more eyes and it just works.
My guess at what we're going to be up to in the future lies in capitalizing on the kind of more fragmented listening tastes that a younger generation will have going forward.
Mm.
And even you see kind of bleeding upwards now to where, you know, people my age and slightly older are kind of after the teenage tribalism, and we realize that kind of punks, goths, hippies, all that is dead.
Yes.
Everyone's listening to everything so you can be a fan of whatever. And now you have all these mad hybridized sounds like God Alone or Messing or whatever.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Do you not maybe see it as a matter of people will be naturally open to what the end result of listening is so long as they're given the hook to care about? Is it a matter of do we kind of dive deeper into human interest journalism and talk about the motivations, talk about the muses and the inspirations more so than indulge in what, you know, the previous old guard of music journalism has done, which has been rock and roll myth making? You know, we don't need another 27 Club. We don't need another, you know, another set of lads, you know, posing as the rock and roll dream. We need to be talking about how music has helped people through their darkest hours and how the creative processes has in turn kind of helped them set up a framework around their life. Like, how do you think we're going to kind of overcome, I suppose, an apathy toward music in a sector? And do you think it's going to kind of take that kind of storytelling?
Storytelling, what you're hitting on there. What kind of hooks me lately, alright, is that someone will come at me and they will talk about an act, but they won't talk about the music necessarily. They'll talk about...
Music is the end goal.
Yeah. They're just kind of giving you what they're about, what they're like, that sort of a way. And if I'm interested in the person, or the band, or the group, I'm more likely... personally anyway, to like their music. And I think most people kind of operate that way on a kind of a subconscious thing. If someone's at the very basic level, if someone's an arsehole, you're not going to like their music.
No.
As good, it could be absolutely stunning, but if you hear that they're an arsehole...
There's a few cases in Ireland already.
Yeah, exactly.
We can talk about that.
You get very muddy and dirty there. But I think, from a writing standpoint... I think we're going to have to rely more on telling those stories and leaving it more open, not just being like, oh, you should like this because it's good. The musicianship is stunning. It's like, people have heard that.
It's very angular.
Yes, you know, it's very straight to the point and kind of like, oh, you should just like this because this is what the best is.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of presentation way, and talking about the person behind the music. What makes them who they are, what's kind of inspiring them to write what they're writing.
Yeah.
And I feel people are just generally more drawn to that. I know, just from personal experience, that I definitely am.
Yeah. How do you think we're going to overcome shorter reader attention spans then? In that we know where traffic is going, because that it's following. Advertising money has followed it, and that's why print is the way it is. And likewise, like... I suppose, how do we battle the shorter attention span? What will it take, I suppose, to lay that emotional hook to get people along in the first place?
Yeah.
I mean, like, a pop band will have a very easy time of making an undiscerning ear care if it's impressive and it's polished, etc. You know, you could be singing about loving someone forever and wanting to stay together forever, and, you know, that'll all be well. But, like, I suppose... the use of language, the use of different media to do so. Maybe talk to us, before we move along, obviously, talk to us a little bit about kind of how we get from A to B in your mind.
Yeah, like, it's definitely, the short attention span thing is, it's a very tricky one. Especially in like long form article, I feel.
Which is where it needs to go quality wise. Because we're already kind of, there's already a massive amount of fatigue regarding clickbait.
Yeah, exactly. It's just trying to get people to commit to sitting down and reading it. I've had thoughts about this for ages, and I just, trying to find a decent way to hook people in is very hard. It's very hard. I wouldn't say that I'm all out of ideas, but I don't think I've come up with like anything decent yet. Because, as you said, like, the fatigue with clickbait is just...
It's there. We're there already.
Yeah, like...
People are leaving social media. How many people do you see daily leaving Facebook still?
Oh, so many. So many. Like, I rarely even... The only thing I use
as far as... Snapchat is dead now.
That's gone, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing I'm really on now is just Twitter.
Yep.
And for all its faults, it's still kind of...
It's the best place for discourse.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
Discourse.
Exactly.
Speaking of discourse, when we come back, we'll get to some discourse about your solo adventures as a musician. JJ, we're back to your playlist. You have Megan Murray with single Broken Ladders.
Yeah, Megan, got to know Megan there recently. We were on a co-tour with Megan when I was playing with Laura Duff. Mm-hmm. And we went all about the country. We had some lovely adventures. And Megan is just, I hadn't known a whole lot about her until she released her first single there. Fantastic voice, fantastic songwriting ability, and her band as well, especially Pat O'Donnell there on guitar. And Megan's songwriting ability, I've just been constantly blown away by. It's great stuff. And especially this new one here, Broken Ladders. It's not new,
yeah,
but it's newish.
You also have Laura Duff, for whom you've been a session bassist in recent times, with In the Winter.
I have indeed. Laura, I've known Laura for a good few years now. Great person, great musician. Had the pleasure of recording this track with her out in Monique Studios with Christian Best.
Because Laura was talking about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, which you can also find on redextra.ie. And, you know, she was very much into the immediacy of the recording process, how things came together. I suppose outline your role in the band and your role in kind of arrangement and recording.
Yeah, Laura approached me, I think it was before the start of last summer. Mm-hmm. She just wanted to get back out gigging and she was looking for together a live band. She asked me, would I be involved? I said I would. She asked me, did I know a drummer? I did. She asked me, did I know a guitar player? And I did. And from there, then we just took it. We had a few jams. And from the outset, we had one or two gigs lined up and she wanted to get into the studio and record these tracks. And yeah, Laura's great. She just comes in with an idea and whatever we want to put on that idea is just up to us. As she'd say herself, up to you. There's a nice little wink and a nod there for the single. That's my bit done. So yeah, and I suppose my bit in the band is I play bass and I'm given a microphone and I talk S-H-I-T on stage.
Well, you could have said that in less letters because we're a podcast and we're not subject to any watershed. But in any case, we're going to go to Megan Murray with Broken Ladders here on Red on Red.
From the start, so why did I keep coming back knowing that everyone warned me about you? Everyone told me to run. All those voices around me only made me want to prove them wrong. Oh yeah, only made me want to prove them wrong. Maybe you're too young to recognize good love. So why do I still long for your fickle-hearted touch? No, I don't want apologies. Just say you miss me. Everyone warned me about you.
and lonely misters in the winter.
Music journalist in self-promotion shocker, Laura Duff with In the Winter here on Red on Red. Still joined in studio by JJ Lee of All the Things All the Time. And before the jump, of course, we were talking at length about music journalism. And thank you for, I suppose, engaging in a discussion that kind of needs to be had music writers. But let's turn around to your own processes now. We've spoken a lot about your collaborations with other musicians, your work as part of a collective, and your work in documenting others, and just generally being the kind of all-rounder that this city in particular so badly needs, so bull a bus for yourself. And I suppose maybe bask in your own reflective glow of discussion of your solo career. Your first single, Thursday, came out earlier this year,
I can't even remember the month. I think it was March, I think.
There's too many songs, like.
Yeah, there is. There's too many.
In general. And it marked a milestone for yourself as it was your first solo recording. Not your first solo composition, though. Maybe talk to us about how your solo thing has come together, what the influences are for you work operating alone, and a little bit about how Thursday came together.
Yeah, I think it was just... I think it was very much so just kind of a stubbornness thing. Mm. I saw other people doing it, and I was like, surely now, at this point, of the amount of music that I've been involved with and helped put out and recorded on, I could surely give this a bash myself. Mm. And I'd always kind of been interested in that kind of lo-fi bedroom pop kind of producing thing.
Yeah.
And I just thought I'd give it a bash and started tinkering around with kind of using Ableton and playing around. And Thursday went through a few different iterations, and I was still faced with that massive problem of being absolutely atonal when it tries to sing. I just can't do it. I have tried multiple times.
Try singing in the baritone.
Oh, I tried that as well. I can't do it. It just doesn't happen for some reason. I could do very shoddy backing vocals, but actually hold like a lead line, I just can't do. So I had this idea for Thursday, and I had all the instrumentation done and kind of recorded. And then I was just showing it to my dearest friend, PJ Galvin, aka Scenes. And I just said, what do you think of this? And would you do me a big favor and perhaps lay down some vocals on it if you wanted? And he agreed. And it was great. And he just said, leave it with me. And he sent me back what was the track, basically. He just laid down a vocal line. He sent me three different versions of it. I played around with it a small bit, chopped it together, and put in then all those clips of Kerry legend, Radio Kerry legend, Weeshie Fogarty.
God rest him.
I know, it's an awful shame. Lovely man. But you know what, when I was kind of writing it, I kind of wanted to have like a nostalgic tinge on it.
Mm.
And people from back at home, and even other people that would just be kind of familiar with like the likes of Weeshie Fogarty and Micheál Ó Muirchertach and stuff. Mm. You do get that sense of just listening to a car radio on a Sunday evening or something like that with all these clips going on in the chatter. And I just kind of wanted to put it out and see what happens. It was kind of a matter of throwing stuff at the wall and see what hit. And people got back to me, and whether or not they were being disingenuous or whatever, but said that they genuinely enjoyed it. And it was like it was listened to more than I ever thought it would be listened to.
That's a beautiful segue to my next question, which is, how did you find the reception? It was phenomenally received.
Yeah, I was really surprised. Like, people were so kind about it and stuff like that, because there is a big element of humour in it as well. You know, mm-hmm. It is, at the end of the day, like Radio Kerry clips, Micheál Ó Muirchertach and John B. Keane.
Yeah.
Jesus, I had complete brain freeze there. But yeah, because he makes up the most of it. And I think anybody that knows me knows that I'm fairly kind of lighthearted, and I tend to take the piss an awful lot. Mm. So that song, I feel, is a very decent reflection on kind of what I'm about musically and kind of the person wise. And yeah, people really took to it, and it was very flattering. You know, it was great to have people just say, well done you. And I thought, thanks very much.
Where's the difference for you then between contributing to someone else's existing songwriting processes and building your own from scratch? You'd played bass and you'd kind of participated in jams, but building all the instrumentation, learning songwriting dynamic, all of this, kind of outline what you do when you're left to your own devices as opposed to working in tandem.
I always make the joke that I play bass because I wasn't good enough to play guitar and I wasn't good enough to play drums. So it's the nice halfway. Yeah, I know. I generally kind of start with drums, all right, and just kind of programming something kind of loosely, and I just kind of build up and start kind of jamming out then and see. I kind of deal with weirder sounds as opposed to something more traditional, and I know what I like, and I've always known what I've liked. I always just try and, regardless of who I'm playing with, I always try and put my own little stamp on things, but I know what I want to do. Even with the stuff that I do now, I'm still, it isn't my true idea of what the music I want to make. It's just that's why I'm limited in the tools that I have. I'd love to do like a Kevin Parker Tame Impala job where that man can just play everything and he can just do it. Like, I can't play drums, so I have to sit down with a keyboard and find a snare sound and find a kick drum sound. And
but Kevin Parkers are, you know, they're rare enough to come across in this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm just entirely jealous of the man. But yeah, I think it's just, I just kind of jam out for a while. Like, the amount of ideas that I've thrown away in the past few months before leading up to putting out a song next week. I feel, and most people kind of suffer from this as well, is just trying to force it into happening.
Mm.
And I was doing that for ages, and there was just, the ideas were crap. And
there's a Tame Impala joke there waiting to be let happen.
There is, yeah, yeah. Well, what joke? It's very late in the day. What's the joke?
I was about to say that you would let it happen.
Oh.
Here all night, folks.
Oh, Jesus, I'm very bad.
Available on your inner speaker.
Oh, Jesus. But yeah, I think I'd be very self-critical in a way as well with trying to make beats and songs and stuff, that I'd spend like a good day, 2 days at something nearly non-stop, and then on a whim just press delete and scrap the whole thing. Not even like save it, just get rid of it all.
It can be tough.
Yeah. And yeah, with Showbiz Baby now coming out next week, that was the first thing that I did in a while where I was actually like, I did it as a joke, and then I kind of went, do you know what? As I was listening to it, I was kind of bobbing my head and going, oh, there's actually kind of something in that.
Yeah.
Even though it is just clips of Eamon Duffy tearing into Rod Little.
Sure, he left his wife for a young one.
Exactly, yeah. Isn't that just a great quote? Like, don't tell me that. That's just been waiting for someone to make a hook out of that for ages.
Why haven't you made a hook out of it?
That's what the track is. That's what the single is next week. That is the hook.
I've not been privy to a preview copy, so I wouldn't know, JJ.
No, I was only formulating the press release today, but I have it on my phone and I'll give you a spin there.
You better. Yeah.
Once we
give it a spin next week then on the podcast as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But the inevitable remarks are going to come from this, and I'm sure you've already kind of received it, mm-hmm. snidely or whatever. it's rarefied air you get to breathe when you become the kind of music journalist that gets any sort of platform whatsoever. Any dickhead can go on social media and go, oh, I don't like this. Yeah. But it's a it's different to be able to articulate your thoughts on a piece of music and speak and write about music in a capacity that, you know, comes off as authoritative in any print or podcasting avenue, you know? Maybe talk to us a little bit about how your music critique and your ability to kind of filter out what you want from what you don't want affects on your songwriting. Do you write the music, say, that you would like to hear personally yourself as a journalist? Maybe talk to us about kind of how one kind of plays into the other.
I think definitely I could come out and throw together something that I personally enjoy, but it's always in the back of my mind where I go, this, not that it wouldn't be received well, but I just know that it wouldn't really register anywhere. And it's very hard to get out of the mindset of, when you've been taking in other people's music for so long and like really digesting it and trying to see what makes it tick. It's all still there in the back of your mind somehow. Definitely when I'm going through stuff, it is a case of, not that I've heard stuff before, but I've liked, and I'm just kind of, wouldn't say pinching, but I'm taking influences from here, there and everywhere. Like in my stuff, it's the guitar would be kind of integral, which would be from like guitar bands obviously, but there's kind of elements of like hip hop and dance music and stuff in there.
The magpie approach.
Yeah, exactly. I see a shiny thing and I like it and I put it in there. It's definitely very difficult coming from like a writer's perspective to trying to do your own music, because
without constantly criticizing yourself.
Yeah, because like I've often gotten press releases in and been like, jeez, that's terrible, and I don't want someone to do that.
I suppose, what's your worst PR foible? What's your pet hate when it comes to receiving press releases?
Off the top of my head now, there's always like a few. I'm just trying to think.
I got a presser today from someone's list I was just on, more so than anything else, describing the music therein as an instant classic. It's like, that's an instant way to get ignored.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think
hyperbole is my personal pet hate.
Yeah, obviously the big one is just people describing themselves as like A, the hottest new thing, or B, one of Ireland's biggest up and coming bands. Because the amount of press releases that you get where people say that they're one of Ireland's,
they're the thing.
They're, you know, yeah.
There is no the thing.
That's not a thing. If everyone in the country was Ireland's biggest band, which
there'd be no biggest band.
That's the thing. And it seems like everyone in the country is Ireland's biggest up-and-coming band, because the amount of emails that you get about...
Does that come down to faking it till you make it?
I think so, yeah.
Considering like how many of us there are, music journals, etc., to send things out to, and we only have so many platforms available to us, and we just kind of have to maximise, you know, the platforms that we have to cover the things that we know that we can talk about authoritatively.
Yeah. I think as well, a lot of it, like when you're getting a press release, if you haven't already seen the name of that band or artist already appear somewhere beforehand, before you get a press release.
I tend to try and make the effort to open it if it's someone I haven't seen before.
Yeah, I agree with you. If I haven't seen the name before, I'm kind of, it's either going to be a gem, or it's going to be someone that is very underprepared.
I would say that it wouldn't be my thing, because you get sent a lot of stuff that you're on like broader PR lists, etc. And it's clearly because you're on a broader list, there's not necessarily the time to discern who's writing about what genre what have you. So like, that is just kind of part of the pratfalls between, you know, dealing with music PRs and dealing with music journalism. But with that being said, there's still a lot of people involved with PR, you know, Notions PR for but seriously, people like Louise Barker, people like Blue Monkey, who do their utmost to keep music journalists on the loop with what developing talents are doing with upcoming festivals and so on and so forth. People that have been fighting the good fight.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things where you see a certain email coming in and it's like, that's one thing I hate about receiving press releases. But that's neither here nor there. When we come back, we'll talk about upcoming bits and pieces that you have, but let's go back to some tunes. You have Elaine Malone with My Baby's Dead.
Yeah, Elaine, I only kind of got really introduced to Malaine
Malaine
Elaine very recently. just kind of before Christmas there and started listening to her, and her stuff is fantastic. Really enjoyed it, and it's great. Like, her music has such a good sense of humour in it as well, and it's, and not just a sense of humour, but it's so, like, what's the word I'm looking for here? There's passion in it. There's genuine passion and feeling in it, and that's kind of rare to come across these days. I really enjoy her stuff.
You also have Alex Goff with Step to Me.
Alex is just a general great boy. He's just, I've known him for a while now. Of course, he's part of the Ghost King Is Dead live band, and
everyone is.
Yeah, I think you're in it as well now, aren't you?
I'm three people in it at this stage.
But Alex, yeah, even with his first track there, whenever that came out, Afraid of Money, that was great. And just, do you know what? He's just a really hard-working person, and all his success and everything that's coming towards him, it couldn't be going to a better person. Fair play to him.
We're going to hear from Alex momentarily, but first, this is Elaine Malone with My Baby's Dead here on Red on Red.
Stay out of it. Imagine if I was actually trying, man. I'd actually be such a legend.
Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gonna listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gonna listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gon' step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Okay, capture the moment. Flash, take a pic, yeah, you don't gotta hold it. Talking about your breath, yeah, you look fine. Yeah, show us your teeth, come on, give us a smile, whoa. Don't worry about the he said, she said. Just about yourself and just about your own hair. Take your own advice every once in a while. Just listen to your mind and you'll be fine. Yeah, you want to talk, yeah, claiming that you don't care, don't give a. We all know that your mind is lacking, cause you're attacking me for some practice. I don't mean to be rude. What do you get? Does it make you feel good? Don't listen to them and just focus on yourself. Yeah, keep your mouth short, try to be your own man. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gon' step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. I hope you don't have one. I try my best to be nice and even. Everybody should be equal, that's fair. Treat people nice, I mean if you dare. You can deal with the outcome, exequence. I got consequences, yes I could tell. Yeah, I could see behind the light through my eyes and burn the light by words from time to time. People look back but always act forward. I don't know why but thought I should warn you. Keep your eyes peeled and keep your eyes wide shut. Watch your back and keep all your friends close, cause that's the way it should be. And I think you agree, yeah. This, for instance, is the politics of the world we live in. So mind your own business. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me unless they got a reason. Everybody gon' talk, everybody gon' say shit. You ain't gotta listen. Ain't nobody gon' talk, ain't nobody gonna step to me.
Alex Goff with Step to Me here on Red on Red. And just before we finish up there for this episode, JJ, shout outs, plugs, indictments of enemies. The microphone is yours. Get them in.
Right. So basically, what's up first? So actually this weekend, I'll be heading down to my homeland of Ballyhaig, down in County Kerry, with Laura Duff for Live in the Haig, which is... I suppose a mini festival, if you want to call it, that my dad actually has taken on the mantle and tried to get something going down at home. As you know yourself, you used to go on holidays down there back in the day.
So, I certainly did. I do miss the chips and the Cruisin' USA machine.
Exactly, yeah. Cruisin' USA machine is gone.
I'd say a lot of things are gone from my time there.
There's a lot of stuff gone in general, but you know, that's the problem. It's trying to bring a bit of life back into a town that was absolutely hopping back in the day. I feel like my generation especially missed an awful lot of that. Like, I was born in 96.
Yeah.
So
Jesus, you're young.
I am a child.
Ugh.
I'm a child.
How dare you.
But yeah, like, I feel like our generation especially missed the glory days, as they want to call it. So like that, now on Saturday we've got Delorento's playing, Laura and Deep Sky Objects, another Kerry band. Great.
Happened
lads.
Down in Flahives in Ballyhike.
Down in Flahives in Ballyhike.
On so. A similar tip, your project will be appearing in a solo capacity on Friday night in O'Cana's in Mallow Arts Festival.
Exactly.
Cheap plug for a pet project of the presenters. 8 o'clock till 10, Ghost King is Dead and Arthur Valentine playing a Hausu acoustic showcase at O'Cana's in Mallow for Mallow Arts Festival. And we also heard from Pretty Happy at the top of the show. They will be appearing between 10 o'clock and 12 in O'Cana's with help from the Slut Club. That's all happening at Mallow Arts Festival this weekend. Give another plug for that single there.
Yeah, so, and I've got my own single there, Showbiz Baby, coming out next Wednesday, the 1st of August, I believe. So yeah, that'll be on all streaming platforms, and I should have a video for it coming out on the YouTubes, etc.
Fantastic.
On the same day, and also the following day on August the 2nd, there's the Hausu Night in Cypress Avenue. You should all definitely come to that. That'll be fantastic crack.
Fantastic. You're a busy man now for the rest of the summer, you are?
I am, because I think the day after the Hausu Night, August 3rd and August 4th, we're going up to Arcadian Fields with Messing.
Yo.
So we've got a DJ set there on the Friday night, I believe.
Yeah.
And we're playing good old, regular old fashioned Messing set on the Saturday. And there's definitely other stuff I've got going on, but these are just the ones that I could think of right now. Yeah. But there's always definitely something.
Where can you be found on Twitter so people can keep up with you in real time?
Yeah, so on the Twitter, which is probably the best place to follow me, you can follow me at JJLeeNKY, I believe that's it. And on the Instagrams at YoungJage, spelled with the Y-U-N-G, like all the cool rappers.
Decent. That's what we're at. Jage, with a hard G.
With a hard G, yeah. I think Cage, with the J.
Johnny Jage. That's what we're after. On that note, we're going to leave it this week for the Red on Red podcast. That's all for this week's episode from Red FM and RedExtra.ie. Thank you very much to JJ Lee for joining us this episode.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please take the time to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple and Google Podcasts. Subscribe to us on Spotify, as well as all of your other podcasting platforms. Every single subscription, every single positive review helps us spread the gospel of DIY music in Cork City farther and farther. So tell your friends, share it on social media, etc., etc. Make sure to check out the artists featured online or an upcoming gig. And if you'd like more Irish tunes, please be sure to listen in to Green on Red on Sunday nights with Alan O'Donovan for the best of all that is Irish on Cork's Red FM, 104 to 106. You're leaving us with a little something heavy.
I am indeed. The best way to finish off any evening, I believe, is an old healthy dose of Aeponym. Aeponym, of course.
I've been calling them Aeponym on the podcast like an idiot.
Well, like I was as well, but Dave Longan of Aeponym says Aeponym. And he will... No, I don't think they're too precious about it. No, this could
Hopefully
be wrong.
Not.
I could get a violent tweet or text after this. And be like,
I've had allegations my way already today from the Aeponym Twitter account, so I assume somebody's in the form for a defamation suit.
There we go, yeah. Dave Long will be on. But, yeah, the lads, first of all, fantastic lads. And secondly, the music is fantastic. And this tune, Worm God, is definitely my personal favourite. We actually made a joke with the lads coming up to their first ever Teletech Showcase event, that there's this lovely little breakdown in the middle of the song where the guitars cut out and they all take a little solo, and I bet Killian Plummer, the guitar player, if he would play the riff from the infamous Dry Roast Peanuts hit Waiting on a Bus in his little solo bit, I'd give him money. This was said in passing months before the gig and I'd completely forgotten about it, and I have a glorious video that I was just taking. So it breaks down, he does a solo, and he plays the riff perfectly. And it shouldn't fit in the song.
But it does.
But it does, and he perfectly fits it in there. And cheap pop for the crowd. Everyone got a good kick. Cheap pop, and it was great crack. And I loved
you're
out
lads. Of pocket too, sucker.
Exactly.
That's it. With that in mind, we're going to leave you with the song that bankrupted JJ Lieb temporarily. This is Aeponym with Worm God. This has been Red on Red, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back.
Red on Red.